All right, so we are holding on Kufchaf Gimel Amr Aleph, fifth line, line begins Kli. We started talking about yesterday as follows. The Mishnah had told us, we started talking about the Dinim of Muktzah in the Mishnah. The Mishnah had told us that you're allowed to, for example, take a hammer and use it to crack nuts. Now, what kind of hammer are we talking about? We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that we're talking about the kind of hammer that's reserved for cracking nuts. Actually, we have, the Tosfos HaRosh mentions, I didn't mention this yesterday, that Rabbi Yehuda would say, even if the hammer used to be used as a blacksmith's hammer or whatever, and you decided to repurpose it for nuts, that's also fine. Just the fact that you decided before Shabbos that you're going to use it for that purpose is enough to make that now you're allowed to use it on Shabbos. But not, Rabbi Yehuda would say, if the hammer is still meant to be used as a blacksmith's hammer, and you decided now that you need it on Shabbos to crack nuts, then Rabbi Yehuda would say, that's no good, you can't use that. So we said, Rabbah had asked, what about we have some of the cases in the Mishnah, which seem to imply that you don't have the thing as reserved. You have a rachas, which we had was a tool that's used for winnowing, where you use it to throw the grain up into the air, or malgez, mazleg, whatever, which is a pitchfork. Those, we said, you can use those to pass food across, let's say, to a child who's on the other side of the river. You don't reserve things for that because you don't have it. It's not going to be that commonly that you're going to have a kid over there that you need to do that. So, okay, Rabbi Yehuda, apparently Tosfos says, would have to say that, yeah, we are talking about you reserved it for that purpose. But Rabbah doesn't like that. And therefore, Rabbah says that obviously what it is the Mishnah is telling us that even though it's a regular blacksmith's hammer, the kind that's used for malacha, which is also, nevertheless, you're allowed to use it letzorech gufoy. So the first one we mentioned, so we said, Abaya asked Rabbah, what about, we have a brisa that says when it comes to a mortar, that you're allowed to move it only if it has garlic inside it. Otherwise it's muktzah. Now, why shouldn't you be able to move it for other purposes, let's say to sit on it? And the answer is that was according to Reb Nechemya, which as we're going to learn as we go on in the Gemara, that Reb Nechemya is very machmir when it comes to the dinim of muktzah and says that any keli can be moved only for its primary purpose. And here, the primary purpose of this keli is to grind up garlic, which, so according to Reb Nechemya, you wouldn't be allowed anyway to use it for any other purpose, including in this case to sit on it. So this is where we're holding. So in the middle of that discussion. So Abaya asked on Rabbah, what about another case? A Mishnah says in Beitza, Vishamar Omim, in Notanasa Eli Lakatsav Olav Basar, Vishamar says that you're not allowed to pick up an Eli on Shabbos, which is an Eli is a big, heavy wooden board or beam or something, which usually is used for grinding up spices and things. So it's the other part of the meducha. Before yesterday, we talked about the meducha, which is the mortar, which contains the spices. And here we're talking about the eli, which usually is actually, it's not used to grind up spices, rather. Sorry. Rashi says actually that the eli is, if it was for grinding up spices, actually it wouldn't be muktzah on Yom Tov because you are allowed to grind up spices on Yom Tov. Sorry. What it is the eli is used, Rashi explains, you use it, for example, if you're going to be cracking wheat grains to make, for example, firefall or other, or bulgur wheat or other things like that, that are made out of cracked pieces of wheat. Also, Rashi says they use it also to pound and grind up bark, tree bark, which then is used for tanning skin. So therefore, the Eli itself is muktzah on Yom Tov because none of those things are you allowed to do on Yom Tov. The cracking the wheat is also, even though it's melachas oichel nefesh, because it's something you could have done yesterday. You don't have to do it on Yom Tov. The tree bark is of course muktzah because you can't tan skins on Yom Tov. So the Eli itself is muktzah, and Beis Shammai is saying, now with a big heavy board, you could also use it as a cutting board, but Beis Shammai is saying you're not allowed to take it, lakatsiv olav basar, to chop up meat on it, or Beis Hillel matirin. Beis Hillel says it's mutter. V'shavin, but both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel do agree, shem katsiv olav basar, that if you did use it as a cutting board for meat, sh'also l'taltalai, that you're not allowed to move it afterwards to put it back where it was. So Bis Hillel is only allowing it because for Simchas Yom Tov, we want that you should have a place to be able to cut up meat that then you're going to serve at your Yom Tov meal, but not to put it back afterwards, which there's no reason to be matur it. That doesn't help as far as Simchas Yom Tov. So therefore, so the problem is, again, it's a kli shemalachti leisu, because usually it's used for breaking up wheat or for pounding. It's usually used for pounding wheat or for pounding tree bark. Therefore, that's what made it mukta. But we're saying that in this case, you're using it for malacha, which is mutter, because you're using it for cutting up meat on yomtov, which you're allowed to do. According to Rabba's logic, you should be allowed to move it because it's l'tzorech gufo. You're doing it for the sake of the thing itself. So why should it be and yet the Mishnah and the Braisa are telling us that not. So savor l'shanuya like Rav Nechemya. So again, Rabba thought to answer. The answer is, like we said before with the Menducha, that this Mishnah and Braisa would be only according to Rav Nechemya, and the Chachamim, that would be Rav Nechemya's version of what Bishamah and Mishil hold. The Chachamim would disagree. But given the Shamalaha, the Amr of Chinin about Shlemi Mishmeh Rab, but then Rabba heard what Rav Chinin about Shlemi had said in the name of Rab, that Hakol Modim, Bisiki, Zairi, Umazuri, everybody agrees with these three kinds of instruments, Siki, Zairi, Umazuri. We'll explain in a second what those are. The Kivin, the Kapid Alayhu, since a person is Makbid on them, he wants to make sure they're not going to get dirty. Or damaged or bent or whatever. Therefore, miyach lehumakim. Therefore, he sets aside a place for them. Hachinam miyach lehumakim. The same thing we can answer as far as the Eli and the Meducha, for that matter. Rashi says that a person sets aside a place for them. A person doesn't want that they should get ruined, that they should get dirty or warped or what have you. And therefore, forget about Reb Nechemya. Even the Chachamim would agree. This is an example of Mukta Machnas Chisarin Kis. And therefore, that would be why we're saying. So again, when it comes to the Meducha, the Braisa would be saying that you're only allowed to move it if it has garlic in it. Again, as we discussed yesterday, one way of looking at it is once you have garlic in it, then you're moving something also together with something mutter, and therefore it should be fine. The other way of looking at it is no. The reason why it's mutter is because then it's not serving as a kli shemalach leisur. It's serving as a container for the garlic. So therefore, it would be mutter. In the case of the eli, same idea. The eli itself would be mukta. You allow this hillel is allowing you to move it just for the sake of chopping up meat on it for simchas yomtov. But other than that, though, it's still mukta, and you're still not allowed to handle it. Now, what are siki zairi or mazuri? So Rashi brings a couple of explanations. One is that they're tools that are used by dyers. So Rashi doesn't specify what's what, but there would be three different tools used by dyers. Then he brings from his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Halevi, that they are three parts of a loom. Siki would be the pillars that the loom rests on. Zairi would be the sticks that hold up the shesi threads. And mizuri would be the upper and lower rollers. Which we've talked about before, we discussed in a previous perek of Rama Sechta, the question which of those you're allowed to handle on Shabbos and which not. So we'd be saying, according to that all three of these would be mukta. Tosfos gives yet another explanation from the Aruch that siki means pegs that are the means pegs or nails or something like that that are used for combing out silk. The word siki is Aramaic for pegs. Zairi would be heavy wooden boards that are used for pressing clothes. And mizuri would be a wooden keli that a laundry man when you're doing laundry, you use that to spread out the clothes on a rock and you bang them with this wooden thing to get the dirt and whatever out of them. So these kinds of things, again, the idea would be that these are things that you're careful with, that you don't want them to get damaged, because then you won't be able to use them for their function. So therefore they're muktzamach maschasar and kiss. Okay. So the same thing with the Eli. So that would answer the question. So yes, when it comes to a regular keli that's muktzamachmas isur, that it's makli shemalach del isur, a keli whose normal function is for isur. Yes, when you have that, then usually excuse me, usually Rabbah would say you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, l'tzorech gufoy, where you need the actual keli itself for some other purpose, which is mutter on Shabbos, but not if it's mukta machmas chesaron kis, not if it's the kind of keli where you don't want it moved because you don't want it used for any other purpose, ordinarily, because you don't want to do it. You don't want it moved from its place because you don't want it to get warped or dirty or what have you. Okay, so Ichmar, so we have a discussion related to that. Rav Chiya ba'aba Amar Rav Yechanan. Again, the question is, what kind of hammer are we talking about in our Mishnah that you're allowed to use to crack nuts? So far we had Rav Yehuda saying it's a hammer that's specifically reserved for nuts, and we had Rabbah saying that it means even a blacksmith's hammer. But within that, we can talk about, what about not a blacksmith's hammer? You have other kinds of hammers as well. Rav Chiya ba'aba Amar Rav Yechanan kurnas shel zahavim shaninu. We're talking about in our Mishnah, even a hammer that's used by goldsmiths, even though, now you are makbid on it a little bit, because you need the head of the hammer to be smooth, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta. You had, for example, in Mishkan, when they need to beat out sheets of gold to make the threads for the clothes of the Kohenim and whatever, so they had to have the head of the hammer has to be completely smooth, otherwise it's going to tear a hole in the gold sheet. So yes, you are machbid a little bit on it, but Rashi says that the Gemara is saying, Rav Chiya ba'aba is saying that you would be allowed to use that to crack nuts on Shabbos. The head of the hammer might be dented. No big deal. What you'll do is afterwards, when you want to use it to beat out gold thread again, then what you'll do is you'll bang it on the anvil a couple of times, and that'll smooth it out, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, as we learned in the 12th Perek, that in fact, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that counts as a malacha, and according to the Chachamim, we said it doesn't. So you'd be allowed to use, according to him, a goldsmith's hammer to crack nuts. Rav Shimon ba'aba, I'm a kurnas shabasomim shaninu. Rav Shimon ba'aba says we're talking about a hammer that's used by spice dealers, where they grind up their spices with it. Now, manda amar debasomim, the one who says, Rav Shimon ba'aba, who says that the din applies to a perfumer's, to a spice dealer's hammer, kol shekin d'zahavim, he would say, how much more so than you're allowed to use the goldsmith's hammer? Again, because the goldsmith's hammer is more easily repairable, is more easily, once you used it for some other purpose, it's more easily returned back to its original function by banging it on the anvil. Manda Omer Shel Zahavim, where's the opinion that says, that's talking about the goldsmith's hammer, he would say, fine, the goldsmith's hammer, the Mishnah is saying you can use, because it's easily repairable. Aval Dvasamim, Kofid Alayu, but he would say that the one that's used by the spice dealers, he is machbid on, because he doesn't want it to get, if he doesn't want it to get dirty or smelly or whatever, if it does, it won't be useful for grinding up spices, because those need to smell good. So therefore, so he would hold that would in fact be an example of Mukta Machmas Chesaron Kis, and you wouldn't be allowed to use that kind of hammer, a spice merchant's hammer on Shabbos to crack nuts. Okay. So basically, then that's the halacha. You're allowed to use a regular hammer on Shabbos to crack nuts. You're allowed to use the kind of hammer that a person is not so machbid on to not use for any other purpose. But you're not allowed to use a hammer that a person, such as the example of the spice dealer's hammer over here, that's not ever used for any other purpose because you don't want it to get ruined. We said in the Mishnah, v'esa kush v'esa karka chola, we gave other examples in the Mishnah where you have a keli that usually is used for Issu. Well, according to Rabba, it's usually used for Issu. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we would have to say this particular one was reserved for a melacha of heter on Shabbos. So we said, v'esa kush v'esa karka chola, we said a kush, which is the needle from a spinning wheel, which you use, as we said yesterday, it's used as part of the spinning process, and it's also afterwards the thread is wrapped around it, and a karka, which is a long thick needle that is a long thin stick that's used to separate the chassis threads and then make them all lie straight when you're setting up a loom. So we said you're allowed to use those, for example. We said in the Mishnah, litchoiv boy, to stick into fruit. Rashi gave the example, let's say you're eating berries or other things like that, and you want to use those as a skewer to stick the fruit and eat it so you don't get your hands dirty. Okay, so now let's talk about a din involving using such kelim for to pick up food. Tana Rabbanan, pagash tumna b'teven, an unripe fig. An unripe fig, which you hit, which you buried before Shabbos in straw, which the straw itself we're talking about would be mukta. Now, if it was straw that you could feed an animal, it wouldn't necessarily be mukta. But we have something similar where the Gemara talks about later on, towards the end of our Masechta, where you have a case where the straw is not edible by animals for various reasons. It might have thorns mixed in, it might be spoiled, whatever it is. Anyway, so you had before Shabbos, you took this unripe fig and buried it in the straw because you want that way it'll ripen faster. So therefore, this straw is mukta because the only thing you can use it for, since it's spoiled or has thorns in it or whatever, is you can use it to mix into mortar. When you're making bricks, like you have in Parshas Shmos, when the Jewish people are making bricks in Mitzrayim and they have business with the straw over there. So like this, the straw is mukta, but you have this unripe fig buried in it, where Tosfos says you meant to take it out there sometime during Shabbos, otherwise it would actually be a basis l'davar aser. Although other Rishonim disagree with that and say that it wouldn't be a basis l'davar also, because a basis l'davar also is defined as when you have the non-mukta item is meant to be in service of the mukta item. Like when you have the Shabbos candles on a table, the table is there in order, you want the table to be used to hold the candles on top of it. As opposed to here, it's the other way around. You don't want you're not using the unripe fig as a basis, as something you're putting the straw on top of it for the sake of the straw. Just the opposite. You're putting the straw there for the sake of the unripe fig. So a lot of Rishonim disagree with Tosfos and say that either way, the fig is not going to be a basis l'davar aser, whether you meant to leave it there for all of Shabbos. But the question is, anyway, how do you get out the fig without moving the straw? So another case, v'charora shetamna b'gacholim, another case would involve a cake that was buried in coals. Now, if the coals are alive, you for sure can't move it on Shabbos, but we're talking about if the coals are dead. So now it's only a problem of mukta. So in fact, Agoris Habach quotes that from Rashi, from a Rashi in Eruvin that we're talking about. But if the coals were live, then it would actually be also anyway, because when you take out the charora, you'd be causing some of the coals to burn brighter and some of them to go dimmer, and you can't do that on Shabbos. But here we're talking about the coals are out. Anyway, so in those cases, the Braisa says, im megula miktsasa, if part of the fig or the charara is uncovered from the straw or from the coals, mutter, then you're allowed to take it out. Then you're allowed, mutter l'tautla, then you're allowed to take it out on Shabbos, because then what you do is you stick a kush or a karka into it, and you take it out, and then the fact that you're not even touching the mukta straw or the mukta coals, you're handling only the paga or the charora itself, and you're causing them to fall off indirectly. So that would be mutter. V'im lav also l'taltala, and if not, then the Braisa says, then the Tanakhama says, you would not be allowed to take out the paga or the charora, because necessarily you're going to have to move some of the straw aside or some of the coals aside in order to be able to get to it. Rabbi Loza ben Tadai Omer, no, Teuchman b'kushay b'karka, you're allowed to stick, okay, according to the Tanakhama, we're not talking about sticking a kush or a karka in, we're talking according to the Tanakhama, if you have part of the paga or part of the charora is sticking out of the coals or of the straw, then what you do is you grab a hold of that part itself and pull it out, and then the straw or the coals are falling off on their own, and therefore you don't even have a problem of handling mukta, but otherwise not. Rabbi Lozman, today he says it doesn't matter. Even if none of it is uncovered, even if all of it is completely buried in the straw or the coals, you can stick in a kush or a karka into it, and take it out, behind Minaris, Malehen, and then the straw or the coals automatically fall off. Omer of Nachman, halacha, Rabbi Loza ben Tadoi. So the halacha is like Rabbi Loza ben Tadoi. So you are allowed to do that. This is called. So the question is, lememra de savor of Nachman tiltul menatzad lo shma tiltul. Are you telling me then that Rabbi Nachman holds that tiltul menatzad, as in this case, where you're not handling the mukta straw or coals directly, you're handling them indirectly by picking up the paga or the charora, and automatically that causes the straw or the coals to fall off? Are you saying Rav Nachman says such a thing as mutter? Don't we also have that Rav Nachman said when it comes to a radish? Now you have, let's say before Shabbos, you buried the radish in the ground. Now you didn't. Now we had a similar thing previously where it wasn't you put it in the ground in order to grow. If you did, then once it takes root, you can't take it out of the ground on Shabbos. So here we're talking about you buried it in the ground in order to keep it, in order to keep it fresh. But it didn't take root in the ground. So Rav Nachman is saying, now a radish is wider on top and narrower on the bottom. So Rav Nachman says, Hai Fugla, milamaila lamasta shari, if you put it in the dirt, the right side up, so therefore you don't need to move the dirt in order to get it out, shari, then you're allowed to take it out on Shabbos, mimata lamaila also, but if you put it in upside down, then it would be also, because then even if part of the radish is uncovered, when you pull it out of the ground, you're going to be moving some of the dirt. You're gonna pick up the radish and the dirt is gonna fall off the sides. So Rav Nachman is saying that you can't do that. So that means he holds that tiltul menatzad is considered tiltul, and since the dirt is mukta, then therefore you can't do anything that's going to cause the dirt to move, even indirectly. So how is Rav Nachman saying the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tadoi over here, and you are allowed to stick in a kush or a karkar into the thing that's hidden, into the fig that's hidden in the straw, or the charora that's hidden in the coals, and pull it out? The answer is Hodaber Rav Nachman. The answer is Rav Nachman changed his mind about that one and said you would be allowed to take out the radish from the ground either way, because in fact tiltul menatzad is not tiltul. Now, of course, the Gemara could have also said that Rav Nachman changed his mind about that the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tadoi, but Tosfos says we do actually find that later on in our Masechta that the halacha is that tiltul menatzad is not considered tiltul, and it is not considered tiltul, so you're allowed to do it on Shabbos, and therefore the Gemara is saying over here that Rav Nachman, in fact, himself changed his mind and now follows what the actual final halacha is, which is that you're allowed to do that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah another example where you're allowed to move something on Shabbos that ordinarily would be mukta. We said machat shal yad little ba chola. We said you're allowed to use a hand needle, meaning a regular sewing needle, to take out a splinter on Shabbos. So let's talk about that. Sholach le Rava brei de Rabba le Rabbi Yosef. So Rava, the son of Rabba, sent a message to Rabbi Yosef asking him. Now as we've talked about before, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef were colleagues. For many years, Rabba was the Rosh Hashiva. And Rabbi Yosef was kind of the second in command. We learned at the end of Brachas, actually, that they offered the position to Rabbi Yosef, and he turned it down. So Rabba was the Rosh Hashiva for 22 years. But after Rabba passed away, then Rabbi Yosef was the next Rosh Hashiva. So Rabba's sons sometimes would ask Rabbi Yosef their shailas. So now he sent him a question. Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, let our Rebbe teach us. Machat shenito charora ay uktza mahu. What would be the din on Shabbos if you have a needle that charora, that the end with the hole was broken off, or uktza, the pointy end was broken off? Mahu, what would be the din? Are you allowed to handle such a needle on Shabbos? Is it considered that it's no longer a keli or not? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Tanisua. We've learned in our Mishnah the answer to your question. We said in the Mishnah, Machat Shoyad Little Barasakot, we said you're allowed to use a sewing needle to take out a splinter on Shabbos. Now, as far as taking out a splinter or a thorn, the thorn doesn't care. It still works the same way to take it out, whether the needle has a hole or not. So therefore, at least in the case where it's missing its hole, it should still be considered a keli, and you're able to handle it on Shabbos, because you can still do the same thing with it, take out a splinter. Esve, but Rabba Brei de Rava asked Rabbi Yosef a contradiction. We learn in a Mishnah, Machal Shenito Charora Eukta Tahora. If you have a needle where the hole is missing or the point is missing, is Tahor, is not Makabal Tumah anymore, which means two things. It means it's not Makabal Tumah from now on. It also means that even if it was Tumah, the Tumah goes away from it. And we learned this earlier in the Masech, actually. So therefore, you see, it's not a keli. So therefore, it should be also to move it on Shabbos also. Amar Abaya Tumah Shabbos Karamis. So Abaya says, what do you bring a contradiction from Tumah to Shabbos? Those are two different things. Tumah Kli Ma'aseh Be'inan. When it comes to being Makabel Tumah, the expression in the Pasuk is that what's Makabel Tumah? This week, the expression in next week's parasha, in Parashas Matos, where you have the story of the war against Midian and all the spoils they captured over there, which that's one of the main sources in the Torah for which Kalim are Makabel Tumah. So the expression in the pasuk goes over there, kol kli maaseh, any functional keli. So it has to be a functional keli. So now it's not, because once it's missing the hole, or once it's missing the point, then you can't use it as a needle anymore. So therefore, sure, it's not makabel tumah. L'inyan Shabbos midi d'chazi b'inyan. But when it comes to Shabbos, all you need is something that's suitable for use on Shabbos. Well, it's suitable. It's suitable because v'ha nami chazi l'mishkel abakoitz, because you can still use it to remove a splinter on Shabbos. So what's the comparison? Sure, it could be considered not a keli as far as Shabbos, but it can be considered a keli as far as Shabbos, where you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. So that was Abaya asked. Amar Rava. But Rava says, Mandaka Moisiv, Shapaka Moisiv. Actually, you should know that Rabba Brei de Rava, who asked the question, actually has a very good point with what he has a very good point with what he asked, with what he's asking. It is a very valid question. Because Midil Inyan Tuma Lav Monahu, the Inyan Shabbos Nami Lav Monahu. Given that, after all, it's not considered a keli. Yes, Abaya is making a distinction between kli maisa that you need as far as tumah and not. But no, Rava would take the view, actually, that if it's not considered a keli relative to tumah, then it's not considered a keli relative to Shabbos either. And therefore, in fact, so that's it. Therefore, so yes, it does have a function on Shabbos, but when are you mutter to handle it on Shabbos? Only if it still has the original function as well, that it's a keli. Now, you could argue, and some of the Mephoshim knew, that maybe if before Shabbos you set it aside, that from now on you're going to use it for taking out splinters, maybe it would be mutter. Other Mephoshim disagree with that also. But at any rate, if you didn't set it aside for that purpose, then for sure, then Rava is saying that no, it needs to be something that has its original function as a keli, and now it does not. So therefore, you can't say, and therefore we said it's not makabel tumah anymore. So therefore, therefore it's not considered a keli as far as Shabbos either. So Tosfos mentions over here this idea about yichud, that if it was still whole, then you could do yichud. Then you could say that you could set it aside as something that you're going to use on Shabbos, as opposed to when it's not a keli anymore. Even yichud, Tosfos says, would not help to make it into a keli that you're allowed to use on Shabbos. Marsha talks about that. The Ran explains that there might be a difference between something that was a keli and then broke versus something that never was a full keli in the first place. Because the next thing the Gemara is going to talk about is, what about now if you have a needle that wasn't finished being made yet? We're going to talk about that. So Ran learns that maybe there could be a difference between when it was fully made into a keli and then it broke, versus when it wasn't ever fully made into a keli. There could be that distinction. But Marsha points out that Tosfos apparently doesn't accept that answer, and says that no, even the gurmei keli, even the unfinished keli, it wasn't made. When you started making it, you weren't making it for the purpose of taking out splinters. You were making it ultimately for the purpose of being a sewing needle, and therefore there wouldn't be that distinction. So the Gemara says Meisvi. I have a
question. One second. According to that logic, no keli that cannot accept tumah is a keli. But you have some keli.
No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying, again, According to so one way of looking at it is, if you had a Cayley which now is broken and now is not a functional Cayley anymore, so now it might be, so now we're saying it would be Muktzan Shabbos, as opposed to if it was made to begin with and has not finished being made yet, in a case where it's functional on Shabbos. For example, we're going to have now a needle that was not finished being made, or that's the Ram's Svara. Or according to Tosfos, a Svara, there wouldn't be a difference. But no, if you have a Cayley that was finished being made, and for whatever reason,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so right. So if you have a Keli that for whatever reason is not Makabel Truma, for example, it's a stone Keli, and stone Kelim are not Makabel Truma, no, then we're not saying that that Truma and Shabbos are the same thing, because it is a Keli after all. Here we're talking about when it's not Makabel Truma on the grounds that it's not a Keli. When it's not Makabel Truma on the grounds that it's not a Keli, then we can talk about whether it's, then we can talk about whether it's, whether it is still therefore now it's Muktzan Shabbos. But when it's not Makabel Truma for other reasons, then that has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos.
But to take the example of the needle that doesn't have a hole, it's still a Keli because it removes a splinter. So what are we talking about?
That was what Rabbi Yosef argued. But Abaya is saying that no, if we see that Abaya and Rava are saying that, so Abaya is saying that that one has nothing to do with the other. That, in other words, Abaya, yes, is agreeing with Rabbi Yosef that since it's still usable to take out a splinter, then it shouldn't be mukta. But Rava is saying that no, Rava is saying that no, it has to be considered, it has to still be considered a functional keli. If we're saying there is a connection, in other words, Rava is saying between Tuma and Shabbos, in the sense that if it is no longer a Keli, because if it is no longer a Keli because it broke, then it can't be considered a Keli as far as Shabbos either. Again, when it's not Makabel Truma for other reasons, then Rava would say one has nothing to do with the other. But here, where it was functional as a needle and now it isn't anymore because the whole end is broken, then Rava is saying that takes away the status of it as a Keli, and now it becomes also to use on Shabbos. Again, Tosfos is mentioning the idea that then even reserving it before Shabbos to take out splinters wouldn't help that particular detail. Other Rishonim disagree with and say maybe it would be.
So by Keli, we mean with the originally intended function, not any other right. function.
Right. And actually, we had a Gemara, actually.
So that's a contradiction.
No, why is it
so that's a contradiction? Because on the other hand, yes, because on the other hand, you're saying that if you can assign another function to the same Keli, you can use it on Shabbos. It's not Mukti.
No. First of all, we're not saying that. According to Rava, we're specifically not saying that. We're saying that once it's broken and loses its original function, then it's not Makabel Truma, and therefore it also loses its status as a Keli as far as Shabbos. In fact, we had a discussion about that earlier in the Masechta, where we had a case over there of a Keli that we had cases of Kalim. We had, for example, a bell whose clapper was removed, and we said it doesn't have its original function. So we said, actually, in the case of the bell, we said, actually, it does have its original function in the sense because you can still bang it on something to make a noise with, but it has to have something, it has to have a semblance of its original function. Here it doesn't, because its original function is to sew, and now it doesn't have that function anymore. So Rava is going according to his own shitta there and saying that therefore it doesn't have its original function, therefore it's not a Keli anymore as far as Truma, and therefore also not as far as Shabbos. If you were to reshape it, okay, maybe you could say if you were to reshape it, if afterwards, after the end of it broke off, if you were to, let's say, reshape it or do some mice with it to show that you're making it into a new kind of Keli, maybe then it wouldn't be Shabbos anymore. But okay, here we're talking about where it still has its original shape and just the end of it is broken. All right. So okay. So the Gemara says Mesvi. So I have a contradiction. A Braisa says Machat ben Nekuva ben She'en Nekuva. A needle, whether it has a hole, Mutal Taltal of a Shabbos, you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. V'loy Amr Nekuva El Inyan Tuma Bilvad. This that we're talking about whether there's a difference whether it has a hole or not is relevant only as far as the matter of Tuma Vatara. So according to Rava, how would that work? According to Rava, we're saying once the hole is gone, once the whole end is broken, then it's not a Keli as far as Tuma and also not as far as Shabbos. The answer is Tirgum Abaya, Libba de Rava. The Abaya explains how Rava would understand it, Begulmi Askin. And that Mishnah is talking about, that Mishnah, Bryce actually, is talking about where it's an unfinished Keli. Zimnin the Mimlachalayo Mashvilahumana, because you might, as you're making it, you might decide, you know what, forget about it. I can't be bothered to make a hole in it. I'm just gonna leave it as a needle without a hole and use it for taking out splinters or for other purposes like that. So therefore, so there you would be able to handle it on Shabbos. So there would be a disconnection between Tumah and Shabbos because it was a gurmi kli. And again, according to what we were saying, the Ran would say that therefore the same logic could apply as with the broken, an opposite logic would apply as with the broken keli. The broken one we would say was a keli and now isn't anymore. Therefore, there'd be a difference. It would be mukta, as opposed to this one never was a keli. Therefore, it would be mutter. The Marsha is saying Tosfos apparently disagrees with that svara and says that no, that even with the broken one, the only reason you're allowed to handle it is because you are having in mind to use it as a different type of keli. So in that case, then fine, you'd be allowed to handle it on Shabbos. Aval heicha de nito chararoi uktza, but says Abaya, Rava would say if the hole was broken or if the point was broken, Adam Zoker Leben Grutois, then a person would just throw it among his scrap metal, meaning and therefore it's not considered a keli anymore. And if it's not considered a keli, then it can't be considered as far as Tumah, then it can't be considered a keli as far as Shabbos either, and therefore it would be mukta. Okay. Worth mentioning, by the way, when we're talking about this, you have now like this, we're accustomed to calling anything that you can't handle on Shabbos mukta. And yeah, I mean that, you know, it's not just we made that up in Shulchan Aruch, for example, at the beginning of Hilchos Mukta, it summarizes that you have six or seven different categories of mukta. And it goes and explains all of them. So on the other hand, you have Rishonim, based on our Gemara and based on other Gemaras, that explain that there's actually a difference. That the word, they say the word muktzah, strictly speaking, only applies to things that a person didn't have in mind to use on Shabbos, because they're not kalim and they're not kalim and they have no particular use on Shabbos. One of them would be an example would be this broken needle. Another example would be the straw that we talked about before. Different kinds of things like that that are not kalim. That are not kalim, and you didn't, and therefore they have no particular use on Shabbos. They reserve the word muktzah for that, and then they say separately from that, there's a separate iser to handle kalim that are used for malachas that are also on Shabbos. That would be a separate thing, not really part of the narrow definition of muktzah. And that we're going to talk about on Amud Bey, is that there were different stages in the evolution of that iser. And why it would be also, there you have different Rishonim talk about Bechlal, why is there a Dinim Mukta? One reason would be because you might carry it from a Shasa Yachad to a Shasa Rabim, or vice versa. Another reason is because you might end up doing the Issur with it. And a third idea is the Rambam writes, because the Rambam writes a couple of ideas. First of all, you don't want to have, let's say, if you didn't have the dinim of mukta, a person could be going and moving things around their house all day, and they wouldn't be resting on Shabbos like they're supposed to. And second of all, also the Rambam says, what about you have people who don't work for a living, and if you don't have a concept of mukta, then they're not doing any of the 39 malachas on a day-to-day basis anyway. So if you don't have something like mukta, then there's not really going to be any distinction between Shabbos and weekdays for them. Anyway, so again, over here, when we're talking about a broken needle, so we could say now it's not a keli, so therefore it fits in the definition of mukta according to everybody. Well, according to Rava, who the halacha is like him, then this would be an example of something that fits in the category of mukta, whether in the broader definition or the narrower one, because it's not a matter anymore if it's a keli that's used for something that's also, it's not a keli anymore at all. And as Abaya had said, a person would just throw it into a scrap metal heap. Okay. Now we're going to talk about another topic, which we're going to relate back to our Mishnah. We said about using a needle to take out a splinter. So now we're going to talk about another topic related to that. Asubi Yanuka. What about, are you allowed to do Asubi Yanuka on Shabbos? So what is Asubi Yanuka? Rashi explains that it means when a baby is born, sometimes you have their various joints get dislocated. So there, and you need to put them back. You need to put them back. You need to manipulate them back into place. Now, what you are allowed to do for sure, according to everybody, and we've learned this before, you are allowed to swaddle the baby, which is we said that you wrap it up tightly in clothing and put a belt around it and whatever, and that helps get everything back into place. So that for sure you're allowed to do. But here we're talking about directly manipulating the joints or the vertebrae of the spine or whatever. So are you allowed to do that? So according to Rashi, that's what we're talking about over here. There are other explanations. I mean, there are other explanations among Rishonim that asuba yinuka means sometimes you have some kind of cartilage in the throat or something in the throat. Maybe it's the uvula, maybe it's the epiglottis or whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is, like falls into the back of the throat and the baby is still able to breathe. Otherwise, if it was pekuach nefesh, there's no question you could do something about it. But here we're talking about it just makes the baby uncomfortable. So are you allowed to pull it out on Shabbos? A related idea that Rishonim bring from Rabbeinu Tam, it's not in Tosfos over here, but it's elsewhere, where Rabbeinu Tam explains that what it means is that this treatment where you're going to pull this thing out of the throat, this cartilage or whatever, out of its place, put it back in its place, may cause the baby to bleed. So all you're allowed to do that. Rab Nachman osir, Rav Sheshes shori. Rab Nachman says it's osir, Rav Sheshes says it's mutter. Whatever the definition of asuba yinuka is, whether it's manipulating the joints and the vertebrae back into place, or whether it's repositioning the cartilage or whatever it is that's in the throat. Amr Rab Nachman Minam Minalah. So Rab Nachman says, where do I get the idea that it should be also to do that on Shabbos? Ditznan. We learn later on in our Masechta, Ein Oisin Apik Dvizin. Shabbos, you're not allowed to make a person throw up on Shabbos, where you drink a certain kind of thing in order to throw up. Now, we're not talking about, Rashi explains, we're not talking about you doing it for refuah, you're just doing it, let's say a person overate, and they want to be able to eat more. It was actually a very, very, very common thing they would have by Greek and Roman banquets or whatever. They would do that kind of thing. They wanted to be able to eat more, so they would make themselves throw up the first course. So later on, the Gemara is going to mention that you may not even be allowed to do that on weekdays because it's Baltashchis. But you're wasting the original food that you ate. But certainly, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. The Mishnah says over there. Now we've learned before that you're not allowed to do refuah on Shabbos. Here it's not also so much because of refuah, because after all, it doesn't involve mixing up any potions or grinding up any spices or whatever. It's still also on the grounds of what's called mesakin gavra. You're fixing up the person. You're making that the person is now in a state to be able to do something that they couldn't do before, and therefore it would be kind of like the malacha of boina. So therefore, sort of Nachman says the same thing with the asuba yinuka. You're fixing up the kid. You're fixing up the vertebrae, according to Rashi, or you're fixing up this thing that's stuck in his throat, according to the other Rishonim. So therefore, you're not allowed to do it. Tosfos explains that actually that not necessarily is the comparison directly to Akpik Tvizin, but that same Mishnah continues, Ve'ein Ma'atz V'nesakotin, that you're not allowed to manipulate the vertebrae of a baby back into place. So therefore, Rav Nachman is just quoting the words, Einosin Akpik Tvizin B'Shabbos, because the beginning of the Mishnah, but he means the continuation of the Mishnah. So therefore, that would be the same thing as the Asuba Yenuka over here. Rav Sheshes. Now, what would Rav Sheshes, who says it's mutter, what would he answer to that? He would say, "Hosam lab urche, hocha urche." The difference is there; it's not normal for a person to have to do a picked vision. Or in the case where the vertebrae are dislocated, it's not really usual, even with a baby, that those should be dislocated. So you can say that it's also to do that on Shabbos because it's not the usual way. Hocha urche, but over here it's very normal that the baby has this thing where you need to do asuri yinuka, where the joints are a bit dislocated, or where the epiglottis or whatever is hanging down into the throat, and you need to correct that. And therefore, so it's no different. Let's say the same way as a baby is hungry on Shabbos, you're allowed to feed it. And that's not considered mesakin gavra. That's not considered fixing up the person, because that's a normal everyday thing that a person has to eat. So the same thing, these kinds of things would be mutter as well, says Rav Sheshes. Om Rav Sheshes menam minallah. But Rav Sheshes says, where do I get this distinction that where it's perfectly normal, you're allowed to do it? The Tanan, we said in our Mishnah, Machachar Yad Little Bar Sakot. We said you're allowed to use a needle on Shabbos to take out a splinter. Now that's Masakan Gavra. There you're fixing up the person. Again, there's no reason to aser it on the grounds of doing refuah on Shabbos because there's no grinding spices involved, but you still might have thought it might be also because of Masakan Gavra. And the Mishnah is saying you're allowed to use a needle for that purpose, implying that it's mutter. So there you go, it's mutter, the same thing. In other words, therefore, to do this asubi yinuka. But Rab Nachman, whereas Rab Nachman would answer to the difference is hasam pocket, hokalai pocket. The difference is over here, the needle, the difference is over here that the splinter is a foreign object. It's not attached to the person. It's stuck in. It got stuck in under the skin. So therefore you can't call taking it out a tikkun. Over here, in the case of the Asubi Yanuka, it's not a foreign object. It's the baby's own. It's the baby's own joints that are out of place. So it's the baby's own epiglottis or whatever that's out of place. And therefore, so therefore that would be considered. So now you're putting it in where it belongs. And therefore, Rav Nachman says that would be more like the malach. That would be more like Masakan Gavra, where you're fixing up the person. And therefore, it should be also. The halacha is like. Over here, the general rule, sort of like we have with Rav and Shmuel, where the halacha is like Rav in Isser and Heter, and the halacha is like Shmuel in Dinim Mamonos. You have a similar kind of thing when it comes to Rav Nachman, and when it comes to Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes, where the halacha is like Rav Nachman Dinim Mamonos, and like Rav Sheshes elsewhere. So here, the halacha is like Rav Sheshes, that it's mutter. With that said, though, again, we have a Mishnah later on in the Masechta that mentions Ein Ma'atzvin as a katan, that you're not allowed to manipulate the joints of a baby, which the Gemara says over there was talking specifically about the vertebrae, because putting those back into position really is more like the Malacha of Boina, of building. So again, obviously, if the baby is in danger, then that's different. Pekuach nefesh is doicha, almost kol atar kola, but here we're talking about where it's just causing it a little discomfort.
What about other joints?
What about other joints? So I'm not sure, actually. I mean, according to Rashi, it seems like we're talking about over here about any kind of joints, except again, maybe the spine, because the Mishnah mentions it later. So maybe then other joints would. But actually, we're gonna have a case later on. We're gonna have a case later on in Or Masechta, I think in the 22nd, 21st, or 22nd Perek or something like that, where a person's joint got dislocated on Shabbos. What they're allowed and not allowed to do for it on Shabbos. So we'll see. We'll see over there then.
So for a baby,
the same thing. The halacha is over here that asubi yinuka is mutter. The halacha is like Rav Sheshes that it is mutter. So therefore, you would be allowed to manipulate the joints, but just maybe not the spine, because when you put the vertebrae back into place, one on top of the other, like the way they were supposed to be, then that's more like boina. Okay. Mishnah said, Kona shel zeisim. A stick that's used for olives. Now, what you have is like this. These are you harvested the olives from the tree. Now you go, you pile them, you make a pile of them, and over time they soften, and the oil starts separating out of the flesh. So now you're able to press them more easily. Now you have a stick that you use at various times. You go and turn over the pile of olives and poke around it and in it with a stick to see whether the olives are ready to be pressed. So this stick, im yesh kesher b'roshay, if there is a knot, meaning a hollow area on the top of it. So Rashi describes, like you have, for example, like in a bamboo stick, you have hollow areas. You have hollow areas in the bamboo, and every so often you have a closed up area. Between one segment of the bamboo and the next. So we're talking about that, let's say. So you have something like that where it has a hollow area at the top of it. Actually, Rashi says, so it could be Rashi is comparing it more not so much to a natural piece of bamboo, but more like, for example, you have in a pen that's used for writing, where you have a hollow at the tip, where we have a reservoir for like a fountain pen sort of, where you have a reservoir for ink, whatever it is. If the stick has that kind of thing, makabel truma, then it's makabel truma for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. The imlav ain't makabel truma. If not, then it's not makabel truma. Either way, it's allowed to be handled on Shabbos because it is a keli either way. So therefore, you would be allowed to use it. You'd be allowed to use it if you want to use it. You can't use it to turn over the olives on Shabbos, maybe, but you can use it for other purposes. For example, the Rid says, let's say you could use the stick. Let's say if you have clothing hanging on a high shelf, you could use it to take down the clothing. So the Gemara asks, Amai. Now, the Gemara is assuming that the Kesher, at the top of the Konash Olzeisim is not actually, like we were saying before, a hollow space. The Gemara is assuming that actually it means a thicker, like a knob sort of at the end of it. So the question is, why would a knob at the end of it make it that it's Mekabel Truma? Pshutei Kli Eitzu. Isn't it a plain wooden keli, which doesn't have a receptacle? Or Pshutei Kli Eitz and Mekabel Truma. And plain, flat wooden kelim or not Mekabel Truma. My time you drummi to sack veinan. Because we know for a wooden keli to be Mekabel Truma, it has to be similar to a sack. Because the Pasuk mentions in Parashas Shmini, mentions a number of different kinds of materials that kelim can be made of that are Mekabel Truma. And it mentions over there wood, and it mentions over there a sack. So we learn from that, as we've learned before in the Masechta, that a wooden keli to be Mekabel Truma has to be like a sack, where a sack has a receptacle. We said also, we learned earlier that a sack can be handled empty, can be carried empty and full, and a wooden keli also has to be Mekabel Truma if it can be carried empty and full. So over here, it doesn't have any, it's not holding anything inside that hollow, or even if it has that hollow, it's a natural hollow, it's not really meant to hold anything. So why would it be Mekabel Truma? The answer is Tana Mishmei Rav Nechemia, the Shosh Mehapech Bezesim, because when you're turning over the olives, what happens is, if it has this kesher, a little bit of oil collects in that receptacle at the top of it, and then you look at it and you see that oil, is that oil of good quality? Are the olives ready to be pressed? So therefore, so now you have, so if there's no kesher, If there's no kesher, beroshoy, then it's just a plain wooden keli. So therefore, yeah, it's not Mekabel Truma. But if it has this kesher, then the point is now that holds some oil inside it. And therefore, and you can use that to see whether the oil is ready to be pressed. Therefore it is Mekabel Truma because it has a receptacle. And therefore it is like a sack. Okay. Either way, we said you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos because it is a functional keli. Mishnah says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol ha-kelim nitolin. Rabbi Yossi says, all kelim can be handled on Shabbos, meaning that there can be, even if they're used normally for an Isser, there is a purpose, they'll usually have a purpose that you can use them for on Shabbos, and you're allowed to do that. Chutz min ha-maser ha-godol, except for a large saw, which is used, Rashi says, for sawing beams, the yosid shomachresha, and the blade of a plow, those kinds of things are an example of muktzah machnas chesaron kis, where you set aside a particular place for them and you're never going to move them and you're never going to use them except for the purpose that they're meant for, because you don't want to use them for anything else because you don't want them to get damaged. That's an example, like we talked on Amar Aleph, of muktzah machnas chesaron kis. So Amar Rab Nachman, so the Gemara says, Amar Rab Nachman, those two that Rabbi Yossi mentioned are not the only ones. You have the large saw and the blade of the plow. There are other ones as well. Hai Uchla de Katsri, also the colander used by laundrymen, which is, Rashi describes, it's a large copper keli. That looks like it's full of holes like a sieve. They use it where they fill it up with water and they use it to sprinkle water on the kelim on the clothes during the process of washing over them. Rashi brings another example that another purpose they can use it for is if they want to perfume the clothing, they burn incense underneath it and the incense rises up through the holes and perfumes the clothing that's sitting on top of it. Whatever it is, that kind of thing, that is like the blade of a plow. It's also mukta machnas chesor and kis. You wouldn't want to use it for anything else. Therefore, it's mukta on Shabbos. And when we say that it's mukta, what we mean is completely, in the sense you can't even use it. You can't even move it. So we've been talking about before that, for example, you have, let's say, a needle or a hammer or whatever. You're not allowed to use the needle for sewing or the hammer for banging nails on Shabbos, but you are allowed to use it for a different purpose. For example, to take out a splinter or crack nuts or whatever. But you're also allowed to move it, for example, if it's on a chair or on a table and it's in the way. So as long as the table itself is not a bosses the dover also, then you're okay. But here, when we're talking about it's mukta machas chesaron kis, that's a stricter kind of mukta. That kind you can't move even l'tzarech gufoy mekoymoy. So you have the two examples in the Mishnah, a large saw and the blade of a plow. And Rav Nachman is saying that also you have also this colander or the sieve that's used by laundrymen. Amar Abaya, Charba de Ushkafi. Abaya says there are other ones as well. Also, the knife that's used by the knife that's used by leather workers and shoemakers, by leather workers, the Sakina de Ashkavta. Also, the cleaver, the big knife that they use in a butcher shop to chop up meat. Or Tosfa says a different explanation. It means a shchita knife, Vachatzina de Nagri. And also the axe or the plane or something that's used by carpenters. All of those kiyasa chamachresha drami. Those are also like the yasa chamachresha, because again, all of those are muktamachas chasarin kis. You don't want to use them for any other purpose because you don't want them to get ruined. In particular, Tosfa says in the case of the shchita knife, you want to make sure that it doesn't get nicked, because if it gets nicked, you can't use it for shchita. So therefore, that would be an example of muktamachas chasarin kis. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, but Rishonu Hoyu Omrim, originally the Chachamim used to say that as far as Muktzah like this, Shloisha Kelim Nitolan B'Shabbos, there are three Kelim that can be moved on Shabbos. Maktsoya Shal Dvela, the knife that's used to cut up an eagle Shal Dvela, a cake of pressed figs. So in the Mishnah, we said sometimes it's so hard that you use an axe to cut it. So here we're talking about a normal one that was not quite so hard. You use a knife to cut it. You're allowed to move that knife on Shabbos. The zua malistra in shokdera and a zua malistra that's used with a pot. Rashi explains that a zua malistra is like a large spoon, sort of, but it's not a regular spoon. It's more used to remove the zuama, to remove the froth and the other stuff that's floating on top of the soup or whatever in the pot. That would be another example of a keli you're allowed to handle on Shabbos. The second ketana shagabe shulchan and a small knife that's on the table that you use for silverware. Now, what do we mean? Does that mean originally you weren't allowed to move cups or bowls or whatever? Tosfos says, of course not. You could, things that are kli kibble, receptacles, of course, you were always allowed to move on Shabbos. We're talking about over here, these three that we're mentioning are not clay kibble. They're not receptacles. They don't hold anything inside them. So of those, the only three originally that were mutter to handle and move on Shabbos were the three that we're mentioning in our mission over here, because in our braisa over here, because you need them all the time. But any other kelim not. So the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch that basically, again, the idea is things that are needed to be able to eat a meal on Shabbos are not, were never considered muktzah. You were always able to handle them. But here we're talking about things that are not necessarily needed for the meal itself, or you could do without them. Let's say, for example, the zur malistrin, you use it when you serve in the soup. But okay, so if the soup comes out with stuff floating on top of it, you didn't skim it off first with the zur malistrin, big deal. I mean, the soup is still edible. But nevertheless, that was still muktzah. Then in stages, the Chachamim were matir certain aspects of the dinim of muktzah, and then they were matir again, ad sha'amru, until they got to the point where we say in our Mishnah, kol ha'kelim, tol m'shabbos, chutz min maser agod of yasa chamachresha, except for things that are muktzah machmas chasor and kis, any other kelim, there are cases where you can handle them on Shabbos. Again, now, we're not talking about there are still categories of muktzah that you're not allowed to handle on Shabbos at all, even after that. Things that are not kelim, for example, rocks and dirt and sticks and things like that. But here we're talking about kelim. Also, the Alter Rebbe mentions, for example, the Gzeira, on the other hand, and the Gzeira never included functional things that are not kelim. For example, Sfarim. There was never an issue on moving Sfarim on Shabbos. Sfarim are not considered kelim. We're talking about kelim as in utensils that a person uses for their use. So, my hitiru v'chazer v'hitiru v'chazer v'hitiru. What are these three stages in being matir, the dinim of muktzah? Amar Abaya. So Abaya says it means like this. Hitiru davar, number one, hitiru davar shemalachter laheter l'tzorech gufay. The first stage was, again, originally we're saying most kelim were also to be moved on Shabbos, even if they were kli shemalachter laheter, with the exception of the three that we said. So first they were matir, a kli shemalachta laheter, l'tzorech gufoy, that you're allowed to use it for itself. So that would be, for example, let's say where you're allowed to use a hammer to crack nuts, would be an example of that. Then the second stage was they allowed you to move that same kind of keli, l'tzorech mekoymoy. Let's say, for example, that the hammer is on a chair and it's in the way, and therefore you want to move it. V'chazru v'hitiru. Then the third stage, Abaya says, is davar shemalachti le'isur. Sorry, that was all of sorry, I shouldn't have said a hammer. A kli shemalachti le'heter, rather. A keli, which normally is used for heter purposes. So again, if it wasn't one of these three, and it wasn't a kli kibble, it wasn't a bowl or a cup, or it wasn't a bowl or a cup or whatever, then originally you were also to move it on Shabbos. So first they were matir that you were allowed to use it for its own purpose on Shabbos. So let's say, for example, we said before, let's say you have a hammer that's meant for cracking nuts. So originally that would have been also on Shabbos. Later on it became mutter to move it letzorach gufoi. Later on also letzorach mekoymoi if it's in the way. And then finally, v'chazuri tiru davar shemalachti le'isu letzorach gufoi ein letzorach mekoymoi loy. Then they would matir something that is malachti le'isu, let's say a regular hammer that you're allowed to use it letzorach gufoi to crack nuts, but not letzorach mekoymoi, not if it's just in the way. V'hoder you still were at the point though where you're only allowed to handle a keli that is light enough to be handled with one hand. That can be picked up and moved around with one hand, because that kind of thing, a person doesn't designate a particular place for it on Shabbos. He may move it around on Shabbos. B'shtei yod avloi, not if it's so heavy that it takes two hands to pick up. Ad sha'amru, eventually, the chachamim were matter so much, and they said, kol ha'kelim, it's on b'shabbos, v'afilu b'shtei yadayim. Even if it's so heavy that it takes two hands to pick it up, nevertheless, the final halacha was that that's mutter. Unless, as we said, it's mukta machmas chesorin kiss. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Abaya, mechti hitiru katani. Look, given that we're saying that they were matir, you said they were matir, and then they were matir, and then they were matir again, and eventually they reached the point of on Mishnah. So that if we're saying that they were matir to begin with, mali l'sarach gufoi, mali l'sarach mekaymai, why would we distinguish the first time that they would matter anything? Why would we distinguish and say that they would matter only when you're using the keli for its own purpose, but not when you're moving it l'tzorach mekoyme, because you need the spot where it is? What's the difference? Ela Omar Rava, so no. Rava says what happened was as follows. The first stage was that they would matter a kli shemalachte leheter. For example, let's say a nutcracker. That they were matir, you can move it letzorach gufay and letzorach mekoymei. V'chazru v'hitiru mechama letzel. Then the chachamim later on were matir even more. That such a keli that whose main purpose is that something that you can use it for on Shabbos, you're allowed to move it even mechama letzel. Even let's say, for example, it was in the sun and you're afraid it's going to get damaged by the sun, so you want to move it into the shade. Or other examples would be, let's say, if you're afraid it's going to get stolen or whatever. So originally that was also. Now the second stage is the chachamim were matter that. Then the chacham would matter a kli shemalachti le'isur, like a hammer. You're allowed to move it letzorach gufoy or letzorach mekoymei, but only for those, not mechamal tzeil. You're not allowed to if you left out the hammer in the sun and you're afraid it's going to get damaged. That would not be a reason enough to bring it in. Still, though, you're only allowed to have one person. Still, it's only if it's light enough that one person can move it. So not like Abaye had made the distinction between one hand and two hands. Rava is saying the distinction is rather between one person versus two people. But if it's so heavy that it takes two people to handle it, then there was a stage when it was also to do that. And eventually they said, as long as it's not then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, even if it's such a heavy keli that it would take two people to handle it. That was, we mentioned at the end of the previous perek, for example, we said Kronos Shabbos Rebbe, that the wagons from Rebbe's household, the carriages from Rebbe's household, you're allowed to move on Shabbos. We said Ka'os and Shabbos Abicha, the ones that are like in your father's house, which okay, Rashi there explains that it means small ones, but Tosfos said it means large ones. So even ones that it takes two people to carry, you would be allowed to. Okay, so according to Rava, those are the various stages in it. Esve Abaya, so Abaya says, I have a contradiction. We learned before, meducha, we said a mortar, im yesh bashum metaltlenoi. So if there's garlic in the mortar, then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. For example, to sit on it, let's say. Vim lav in metaltlenoi. So if not, then you're not allowed to. Now, according to you, Rava, it's a kli shemalachti le'isur. So according to me, fine. You're allowed to move it. According to me, the eventual heter was you're allowed to move it letzorach gufoi, but not letzorach mekoymoi. So we could say, therefore, the Braise is talking about that you wanted to move move it only the Sarach Mekoymai because it's in the way and you want to move it out of the way. But according to you, it's mutter. According to you, it's mutter the Sarach Gufay and the Sarach Mekoymai. So why, according to you, are you not allowed to move it? The answer is Hacham Ma'iskin Mecham Otzel. Okay, but here the Braise is saying that we're talking about moving it from the sun into the shade. And that, even Rava agrees, because the Klish Malach Dele Isser would be also to do on Shabbos. We learned yesterday, and reviewed it quickly today, that we said that Rabbah had given a different answer to that, that that Braise would be only according to Reb Nechemiah. But then now Abaya is giving a different answer. Even the Chachamim would agree that it's Muktzah. Rava would say that we're talking about it is still, even the Chacham agree, you can't move it mechamal tzel in order to save the keli itself. So Abaya asked another question on Rava from the Mishnah and the Braisa that we talked about on Amud Aleph. For Shoven Shim Katzav Al Abaser Shalosel Latal. Like we said, Besilul allows you to pick up the eli and use it as a cutting board to cut up meat on Yom Tov, but they agree with Beis Shammai that you're not allowed to move it afterwards. So now again, according to Rava, why not? It's a klisha malach de leisur, and you should be allowed to move it. Letzarech gufay letzarech mekaymei. And again, the answer is Hachav Ma'iskin and Mechamal Tzel. Again, we're talking about that you're moving it from the sun into the shade. That would be where Basil is saying it's also to move it, but again, not where you're moving it because it's in the way and you need to get it out of the way. Again, on Amud Aleph, we have Rabbah answering it differently, that an Eli is different because it's big and heavy and you reserve a place for it. But now we're going now Rava is explaining differently that even that wouldn't make it also to handle. The reason why it's also is the only reason when it's also is when it's mechamel itself, to save the thing itself. So the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rav Chanina, we'll continue tomorrow, but Omer Rav Chanina, b'mei Nechemya ben Chachalya Mishnis Mishnazu. This Mishnah, this Braisa, meaning that we're saying that originally they asked you to handle almost all kinds of Kalim on Shabbos, that goes back to the time of Nechemya ben Chachalya, Nechemya from Tanakh. The pasuk says, "By Yom Ha'Hemer Reisi BeYehuda Derchem Gittes BeShabbos Umuviim HaRemus." The pasuk says that at that time, Nehemiah says, early in the time of the second Mishmekesh, I saw in Yehuda that there were people who were pressing their grape, who were treading on their grapes, which is the malacha of Dosh on Shabbos Umuviim HaRemus, and they're carrying bundles of grain or whatever, which is the malacha of Hetzav Achnasa. So he saw they were doing actual malachas of Shabbos. So therefore, he and the Chachamim of that time, the Anshet Nesagdola, had to make a very, very strict gzera of mukta, with the idea being that if you can't even handle things that are mukta, then you're not going to come to do malachas on Shabbos. And then over time, as they saw that people are getting more careful with Hilchas Shabbos, then therefore they were able to be matir more and more of these dinim, as we said before in the Braisa. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, but just one thing that's worth pointing out. It does, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch, based on earlier poskim, that one thing is, even now though, you're not allowed to move a keli on Shabbos for no purpose at all. Even a kli shemalach de laheter, or even a keli that was never included in the gzeirah, like a bowl or whatever, nevertheless, you can move it if you want to eat from it, obviously, that's the tzorich gufoy. You can move it if it's in the way and you need to get it out of the way, that's the tzorich mekoymai. You're allowed to move it if you to bring it inside, let's say, to keep it from getting damaged by the weather. That's mechamel tzel. But if stam, you want to pick up a bowl and carry it around, you would not be allowed to do that, because that part of the gzera was that part of the gzera, or even a bowl which was never included in the gzera, was never mutter in the first place. Just to move it around for no purpose at all on Shabbos would be usur. Okay.